What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 156 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined for the 156th time by the only person in the world who likes Justin Bieber's new song, Yummy, the king of the courtside, Joey. Joey, I'm questioning your taste of music. Just a little bit.
I honestly have no idea what the most recent songs Justin Bieber even recorded is. The last thing I remember is that Baby song.
Well, funny enough, you know how that song goes baby, baby, baby? This one goes yummy, yummy, yummy.
No, you're kidding.
I wish I was. You know, do me a favor, and Nation, do this too if you want to torture yourself just a little bit. After the podcast is over, after you're done listening or if you're watching live on Twitch, go to YouTube and actually, you know what? Do you really want to give him views or listens? I don't know. But if you're up to it, listen to the new song or watch the new music video. It is bad. I'm just going to leave it there. It's not a music podcast, Joey. I could go on for days about music. But this podcast, last I heard, was about esports and video games. So, Nation, because we're not talking about music, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, if you need bad musical takes, follow Joey at Courtside King. If you need wonderful music takes, i.e. everything but country, because I don't believe in country, that's me, Fiasco. Hi, if you're here on Twitch, beautiful mugshots you are staring at. Those handles are right below you. If you're listening later on a podcatcher of your choosing, they will be in the show notes for you below. Nation, while you're at it, it's 2020, which means you need to do a good deed. That good deed could easily be leaving us an amazing review on your podcatcher of choice. The Level Up Podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes and Google Play. Reviews do go a long way to help the show grow and reach new listeners. So when you do have a moment early in the year, make your New Year's resolution to leave us an amazing review. We would appreciate it. Nation, I'm going to be honest with you. I have a major task this episode, and I don't know if I can do it. I will have to defend Sony's annual decision not to attend one of the biggest gaming conferences of the year. Joey and other Xbox fanboys will rejoice in my pain and sorrow that comes with defending Sony day in and day out. Joey, aside from you being excited to celebrate my pain today, what else are we talking about in episode 156?
John, we have a lot, as usual. So looking at a lot of different things, we're hitting a bunch of different angles. One of the big things being rosters. Now that we're getting closer to the League of Legends season, we're seeing a lot of coaching moves being made there, as well as just content creators being picked up. On top of that, we're looking at a number of partnerships that are really exciting in both the technology, the gaming, the esport industry. So we'll hit on a bunch of those, as well as possible esports events coming to IMAX theaters near you. We had a Nintendo Direct and much more.
Joey, it's going to be a long show. I already feel it. I already feel it because Sony is doing me in once again. I cannot wait to get to that topic. I am actually dreading that topic. So, Joey, I'm going to get to a topic I really do love. And, of course, I'm talking about the drink of choice, that amazing time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation to generation to generation. Four generations now, Joey. Joey, for the one, I almost said 500, for the 156th time, sir, I need your beverage of choice for the show.
John, I am stuck with drinking water this week, unfortunately. I am on painkillers. I had no choice. I thought about it. So the back of the bottle says, do not take with alcohol. I was like, what if I just did it anyway? But then I was like, probably not the best decision. So I am here. I'm on painkillers, drinking some water, and maybe a little hot toddy afterwards once the painkillers wear off a bit.
Joey, that label translates to don't get drunk while taking this. It doesn't mean you can't have a glass or seven.
You know, like, I like to play
beverage
a little bit safe here, especially given how this foot has already treated me so far this year.
Joey, I will be picking up your slack then. I'm still on my wine kick. I don't understand this at all.
I love it.
I'm having a lovely 2018 Malbec from the Mendoza region of Argentina. Campo de Pierda. I apologize for slaughtering that name. I promised my Spanish teacher to never attempt Spanish, and I just failed that class back in 10th grade now because of it. Joey, you have your water. I have my adult grape juice. I want to get into some topics here. Let's jump right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
So I will, but a few things I want to touch on from your intro. One, that whole Justin Bieber thing, if you guys have not heard it, you need to check out Banelings. So this was done by Husky StarCraft. I feel like it was like 5-6 years ago, maybe even longer at this point. Is when StarCraft was huge. This new unit came out, the Baneling. It's a very, very well-done parody of the song, so check that out. Two, if you did not notice in the intro, we are no longer doing SoundCloud. We are not at SoundCloud anymore. We just crunched some numbers. It did not seem at least worth it for the listens we get there. With 99% of our listens coming from other platforms, we've decided not to continue with SoundCloud, at least for the time being. And three, I am still sick, so there might be some sniffles and some coughs here and there. I have not figured out how to mute my new mixer yet, so we're going to do the best we can, but that is a warning, especially for those audio listeners out there. With that, I think we're good to go.
You sure?
By the way, great jersey over there. Where'd you get that one from, John?
VYSA Gaming. Big shout out to them first off. They just launched their very first live in-person event this past weekend. We had the honor of casting and producing the stream for them. Really great event at Tech Time Gaming Lounge in Woodbridge, Virginia, along with the partnership of Esports Fair Play, Pat, and it's an amazing organization that we've had the honor to work with several times. Joey, it's always great when a community not only supports themselves but really help grow esports locally. And this is just another way that, you know, not only that we can do our part to help grow, but other organizations taking that risk. And, esports does get somewhat of a bad rap, especially with older generations. But the funny thing is, as soon as you show them the numbers, as soon as you show them the benefits to gaming, the benefits to community, which the esport and gaming community is probably one of the strongest communities anywhere, I will challenge anyone on that. It is absolutely the truth. As soon as you show them all the facts behind it, they can't ignore it. And what happened on Saturday for VYSA and their initial in-person event hosting the FIFA 20 tournament, the FIFA 20 Cup, numbers say everything. Numbers say everything. So big congratulations to VYSA Gaming on their initial FIFA 20 tournament kickoff. And we look forward to helping them out and hosting more events for them in the future. Joey, I don't know about you. I had a great time doing it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm trying to find their Twitter as well. Is it VYSA Gaming?
Yes, at VYSA Gaming.
So listeners, if you want to follow them for any future events, go ahead and check them out on Twitter at VYSA Gaming. They can also be found on Twitch, VYSA _ gaming on Twitch. Sticking with FIFA, John, let's jump into those roster moves. So the Philadelphia Union, they made a very interesting decision. It brought about a lot of publicity, and we did see how it played out a little bit this past weekend. The Philadelphia Union signed Super Bowl champion and NFL Pro Bowl running back Jay Ajayi as their EMLS Pro. John, Jay went on to not have the greatest tournament as far as it goes. We'll touch a bit more on it later in the show, but he did go winless. He did not put up a single win, and he did get an auto bid into the playoffs where he did not continue on past that first round either. It got a ton of views. This is a very popular NFL running back at the time. He played in Miami. Then he went to Philly. He was on that Super Bowl team, and he was a pretty decent running back. Right now, he's a free agent trying to find another team. In the meantime, in a sense, off season for him, he has moved on. He's looking at EMLS, and it was not a pretty debut for him.
Yeah, if he plays like that in the field, I'm pretty sure not even the Canadian Football League will take him. I will save my opinion until we get to that section a little bit later on. But the Union, horrible move. Go on, Joey, you're good.
Oh, I didn't look up the rest of this, but we're going to go with it anyway. Yeah, I was a little behind on notes. Hobbling on my commute was a little rough today. The Shot Caller has been retired. Those of you who follow the Shot Caller, it is an esports journalism site. And they do a lot of great articles, especially based on the European esports scene with the LEC over there. CSGO is another scene they've touched on and a few others. One of the big names over there, Darius Ex Machina on Twitter. He has ended up moving on, and the whole Shot Caller will retire with that move. Darius will be moving on to become the senior content manager for Schalke 04 for the 2020 LEC season. His counterpart has also moved on and will be moving into a role with Fnatic. With this being said, John, I think this is a really good move for Schalke and Fnatic. You're looking at two of the best journalists over in Europe so far. I don't want to say they're the Jacob Wolf, but they're about as close to you as you get over in the EU version. So they are over there. They know the players. They know the coaching staff. They know the organization very well. They both had a very strong lead in League of Legends. Now they're moving on to help organizations. And someone like a Schalke, I think this is really going to help them move from, I would give them about mid-tier status up to a higher tier status, having that wealth of knowledge and those connections. And then as a Fnatic, a leading organization, this is just going to move you further up to the top.
Yeah, you know, it's always good. You know, the problem, the one thing people tend to forget is that esports have to market in a different, unique way. They're not traditional sports. They're not going to get the airtime on TV. You're not going to get the airtime on radio, and you're not going to get the same kind of publication or coverage in traditional newspapers or newspaper outlets online. So you have to create your own content. That's one of the things that we constantly praise about Fnatic, Cloud9, and some other organizations, that social media content is absolutely insane. This is a great opportunity, especially for Schalke, to really kind of up their game. And like Joey said, bring them up to that mid-upper middle class, if we will, of esport teams. I really like this move. Unfortunately, Shotcaller is gone. You know, unfortunately, it's another esport publication that's kind of putting out that media that a lot of fans want. Unfortunately, that is going to the side, but look on the bright side for Schalke. This is a great move. Expect better social media marketing and content from them, and I expect their fan base to grow because of it.
I couldn't agree more. And the other side of the shot caller and the big other name over there, Loco X, he's moving on to Fnatic, like I said. On top of the shot caller, he also co-founded the organization Penta, which many of you know in the EU esports scene as well. So he'll be coming over. I believe he is going to be, I don't have the proper title in this article, but I want to say he's like the team manager or something along those lines for Fnatic, with a new team director coming in as well, and that's Zafra. He's going to be the director of operations. He was formerly with Origin as a CEO and then with H2K in a similar role as a director of operations. On top of that, we have two new coaches for that Fnatic LOL squad, and that's going to be Agi and Vigar V2. Agi was there previously. He was on one of the Fnatic's Worlds runs, I believe the one that Caps was a part of, and then Vigar V2 has worked with Nemesis, the mid laner, quite a bit. He's trained him as a mid laner, both on the champion Vigar and other champions. I think he's going to be one of the most talented players in the scene as far as coaching goes. He's a very high-level ELO player, but then bringing that experience and already showing that he is good at coaching with what he did with Nemesis and a few other Vigar players throughout the year. I want to say he worked with Cloud9 as well. So really cool getting to see him move forward in a new coaching role. He's very well known for bringing creative picks to the Rift as well. I'm hoping we don't see too much of that whole Garen Yumi thing again this upcoming season, but I like the idea of creativity, keeping players on their toes. We saw G2 do it very well last year. Fnatic had glimpses of goodness doing it. At the same point, I think bringing him into a standard coaching role, allowing this group to grow together, bringing in so much wealth of experience with CEOs and director of operations, I feel like this squad is really set for a firm foundation. And one of the issues that Fnatic has seen in past years is just the negativity of the team. Very talented players, but then there'll be differences of opinions and maybe not a strong enough coaching voice. Some people argue coaching, some people order as far as the manager goes, but the strong voice was not there outside of the players. Now you're bringing in a younger coach, which brought up some question marks, but a lot of wealth of talented experience from other orgs as well. So I like the look of this Fnatic squad. What are your thoughts, John, moving into 2020?
I want to touch on your word usage, glimpses of goodness, to describe Garen Yumi. Sure. Yeah.
It had some good moves. I mean, not only that, but some of the other stuff they pulled out.
That was so bad. Oh my gosh. No, I like the move. You know, I think one of the bigger complaints people have in regards to League of Legends is that sometimes the meta can get really stale, can get really boring. So the way teams can kind of make it more entertaining and really kind of excite the fans, maybe not just the fans of that organization, but all esport fans that watch League of Legends, is by switching it up. You know, just a pocket pick. Maybe bring out, you know, a Caitlyn if she's maybe like a high A tier, but like no one's picking her. Or a Kog'Maw. When's the last time you see Kog'Maw on the Rift? It's been forever. Or Malzahar. It hasn't been since like two world championships ago that you've seen Malzahar. You know, when you pull something spicy out of the bag, it makes it entertaining. It's different. It's unique. Whether it's meta or not, people enjoy seeing that. Lock in Teemo. Everyone would love to see Teemo on the Rift. I would hate to see Teemo on the Rift. But that's the kind of things the community wants. They don't want something stale. Pocket picks that are kind of unique and spicy like that is always good for the community and gets people talking.
And on top of that, G2 also made some staffing changes. They're bringing in Izpah and Angel Archer to their backroom staff. Again, this is a G2 team that did very well in Europe last year. They went to the World's Final. They went on to lose to a Chinese region, just like Fnatic did in a previous year. So now they're coming in, they're changing things up a bit. They want to keep that same G2 style that really brought them uniqueness to the Rift. But on top of that, they're bringing in some other analysts and coach to try to add to that style and shore it up a little bit more as well for this next season. And G2 also added Toha, and he will be their newest Fortnite player. On top of that, he was a content creator for G2 previously. Now he's going to move forward with that content creation, continue doing it, but also move into the actual competitions as a Fortnite pro for G2 as well. Sticking with G2, because they are all in the news this week and last week, they have also inked a deal with Secret Lab, one of the biggest chair partners out there. Secret Lab, well-regarded up there with AK Racing, DX Racer. Secret Lab is one of the top three, really, in a lot of people's brands. Now G2 moving forward as one of the better organizations in esports right now, in particular their LOL team really driving that. Now they've secured a big partnership with Secret Lab. I really like this move. I think if you're going to secure with anyone, Secret Lab seems to be that number one at the moment, G2 being up there as a top team as well.
Yeah, and really when you take a look at Secret Labs, they kind of really came out of nowhere. Like, they really boomed onto the gaming chair scene maybe about 2 years ago, and they started securing major, major deals with big esport organizations. This is Secret Labs really continuing that momentum, signing with another massive European team in G2 Esports. I don't own a Secret Lab chair. I have thought about it. If they weren't so freaking expensive and the shipping wasn't so much on it, I'd probably think about it just a little bit more, but I'm cool with my AK chair at the moment. But a good friend of ours, Pat from Esports Fair Play, has a Secret Lab chair. In fact, he has the Batman Dark Knight chair, and he absolutely loves it. Their quality, everyone that I know that has a Secret Lab chair absolutely loves it, and that's what it comes down to. Gaming is so much a word of mouth kind of promotion and marketing thing between the community itself and trying to bring more people into the community through that word of mouth, that Secret Labs is really gaining that traction, really getting that reputation throughout the entire community of a quality gaming chair. And look, if you're going to be sitting at the computer, sitting on your console for hours on end, you might as well be comfortable doing it. Now, granted, you should stand up, move around a little bit, get the blood flowing. But if you're going to be sitting down for a prolonged period of time, you don't want to do it in a folding chair. You don't want to do it on a wooden stool. You want to do it on a chair that's going to be comfortable. You're comfortable, you're going to play better. Just leave it there.
Yeah, my office chair doesn't quite cut it. If you guys notice throughout the video, I will slowly sink down as my chair dies.
If Joey wasn't short enough, he like slowly becomes shorter throughout the show.
Yeah, it's really the cheap office chair route does not quite work out for long sessions here. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens today. But yeah, if you're looking at chairs, I've heard Secret Lab is one of the best up there. Definitely check them out. If you're a G2 fan, now you have an added reason to check them out as well. Excel Esports making big moves. So they're signing a very young roster for League of Legends. They're also looking to other scenes, and they did bring in well-renowned six-star general, as he calls himself, Joey Youngbuck, from Fnatic and then formerly G2 as well. He'll be the coach of the LOL squad. On top of that, they've signed on lead partner, and it's going to be a telecom company, BT, over in the UK. And it's going to be a similar deal to what we see with Fnatic and OnePlus. I don't know if their mid laner will give it quite as much love as Nemesis does with OnePlus and some of those ads, but at the same point, BT will be shown on the jerseys as a center label. I think it's a good move, John. I mean, when you look at it in general, I've never heard of BT. I think it's more European, really UK related, but at the same point, I think the center jersey sponsor is becoming bigger and bigger. Esports companies need ways to fund outside of just winning prize pools. They need to find more ways to put sponsorships. We've seen it in traditional sports. Jersey sponsors is a huge thing and a great revenue bringer. I think this is going to be a big move and one we continue to see throughout many, many esports organizations to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big thing here, too, is telecom companies have that reputation of wanting to sponsor organizations. You see it in traditional soccer all throughout the world. T-Mobile is a big one that does a lot of it, and T-Mobile has dove headfirst into the esport market as well. They were pretty much one of the first telecom companies out there to jump into esports. It's not surprising to see more jump in and try to get their cut of the pie. I like it. It's a smart move. It's great for Excel. Excel needs the money. I mean, who doesn't need the money? And I think it's going to be a great deal having their logo front and center on that jersey. I mean, Joey, prior to Fnatic's OnePlus partnership, I've never heard of OnePlus. So now, you know, granted, it's not really big in the U.S., but now I'm aware of OnePlus, and it's not new to me. It's something I'm familiar with now. So, and that's the whole thing, is you want to create that familiarity with it, and you want people to learn about your product and kind of use that word of mouth also to kind of expand their reach. That's the whole point of a sponsorship. I like this deal for Excel, and I like it for BT Telecom also.
Yeah, and I mean, just to throw it out there, if I was not already in the Apple ecosystem as far as phones go, I think I would highly consider getting a OnePlus after the deal with Fanatic. I've just heard so much about their device on so many Fanatic streams, and I see it everywhere. It's got a Fanatic mode on it for gaming. I feel like just so much of it has been pushed by Fanatic that if I was not already so endeavored into Apple, I think I would probably make the switch, like, here and now if it's available in the U.S.
Mobile gaming mode, that just...
Hey, it's Fanatic mode.
I don't buy it.
Well, you see, sir, after we talked about it, I believe his last podcast or the podcast before, mobile games are just absolutely killing it this year and last year. So keep an eye out there, sir. Mobile gaming modes, it's going to come to more phones. Cloud9, hey, speaking of mobile gaming and more, Cloud9 has partnered up with Microsoft for a C9 hackathon at Microsoft Seattle campus. Not Sony, Microsoft is who they partnered up with, and they're collaborating on new esports technology. This is a really cool move. I believe their CSGO team was the headliner for this one. They ended up traveling out to Microsoft Seattle campus. They worked with a bunch of professionals at Microsoft as well as some students. They did some work as far as possible esports tech, had some conversations. I think this is a really cool move. Cloud9, again, very much like Fnatic and G2, they're one of those organizations that really continue to push the limits, to try new things, to be different. Microsoft is a great partner to have. If you're looking at a hackathon and you're looking at successful organizations in the U.S., really, in North America in general, Cloud9 and Team Liquid have got to be up there, Team TSM possibly as well, unless you look at their international competition record. So there's a few different things to look at, but if you're going to partner with anyone, Cloud9 is going to bring a wealth of experience to that. I like this move as well for Microsoft and Cloud9.
Yeah, it's definitely a good partnership. And as much as I dog on Microsoft, they're a good company. They know what they're doing. These hackathons create a lot of activity, a lot of traction online. And it's good for both organizations. It's publicity for Cloud9, and it's Microsoft essentially saying, hey, try to hack our program, and if you find a way to do it, then cool, you get a reward and, like, serious credit from Microsoft. So hackathons are a cool thing. It's a good thing overall because it keeps the overall Microsoft ecosystem safer with people working to try to crack ways to exploit Windows and everything else that Microsoft does, maybe the Xbox ecosystem, maybe someone's trying to do a whole PlayStation Network shutdown on them. It's good overall, and I think that's one thing gamers and kind of tech nerds have in common is that love for developing technology and kind of that nerdy aspect where it's like, okay, cool, hackathons are kind of cool. Like we did an event a couple months ago, Joey, where after our event, Microsoft was coming in to do a hackathon right after us. And that was kind of cool. No, it wasn't Microsoft. It was Facebook, I believe. That was coming in to do a hackathon after us. So it was kind of cool that, it was like one day we were there and the next day Facebook is doing a hackathon also in the exact same space. So a lot of companies are doing it and it makes sense. And this is a great partnership between Cloud9 and Microsoft. And it just makes everything better.
Now, we have been dogging on Sony a little bit this episode, but to continue that a bit and take a little bit of a naughty turn, John, a little small side note here. They have added someone big to Xbox Game Studios once again, this one being one of the big environmental artists for Naughty Dog's studio. This is someone who has worked on Naughty Dog Games, one of the biggest developers for Sony. They've added a new name, this one moving to Ninja Theory, not the Initiative this time, moving to one of the other studios, Ninja Theory, the one known for Senua's Sacrifice. They're also working on a few other titles over there, like Bleeding Edge. Now they've added Andrew Watkins from Naughty Dog. So we're not going to touch on it too much. It feels like this happens every other week nowadays. But another huge, huge signing. And the one thing I really want to look at, and again, not to touch on it too far, but the environmental stuff that Sony has done over the last generation, if you look at the detail of stuff like The Last of Us, if you look at details of God of War, they have absolutely dove into environmental design very heavily, and they have demolished Xbox in that area. This is Xbox, I feel like, realizing that and saying, how do we get better environmental artists of our own? They've been doing a lot of trainings. They've been doing a lot of stuff in schools to help build designers up for gaming. But on top of that, they're looking at their competition. Is our competition interested in making a swap over? And so far, they've ended up getting a lot of designers this way. Another big get for Microsoft here.
Do you feel good about yourself, Joey?
I don't feel good about myself. I feel good for gamers in general. As we continue to diversify the studios, so Sony still has a ton of talented designers over there. Okay, it's a few names. It's been a handful, maybe 10 at most, that they've pulled as far as environmental designers go. And they're big names. They are big names. But at the same point, we're looking at the studios over there. They are large. There's a lot of designers left over there. In doing this, I think we end up seeing both parties with very talented environmental designers, and I think that just means a huge win for gamers everywhere.
I believe what Joey tried to say. Allow me to translate for Joey. Microsoft is going to take every top-tier designer and leave Sony with the interns, and then if Sony develops the interns, Xbox is going to take them also. So essentially, Microsoft is doing the age-old saying, if you can't beat them, buy them out and force them to join your company. Congratulations, Sony. You're just ruining everything. And Joey, I do not see this as a good thing. It's only a good thing if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem, if you're an Xbox player. If you're a Sony fanboy and you enjoy all that amazing graphics and environmental output that we've seen in all these titles throughout the year, guess what? You have to go to an inferior console now to
actually, you won't have to go to an inferior console because everything will be accessible on PC, ladies and gentlemen. Hashtag PC Master Race.
I'm just saying for all the console players out there.
I'm just saying you're going to have a PC available for about the same price soon.
Mm-hmm. Or you get the new Xbox that looks like a PC.
And it runs like one too, apparently. Platinum Games has received a capital investment from Tencent Holdings to expand into self-publishing. This is an interesting move. Again, I don't think it's something we need to touch on a ton. But Tencent is taking over the world. They're right up there with Amazon and Microsoft and Google. They're a huge developer out of China. They have a big stake in the music industry, in the social media industry, in the video game industry. They bought Supercell a while back. They own the majority share of Riot Games. They have shares in Activision Blizzard. On top of that, now making investments into Platinum Games. Platinum Games, a very popular company. JRPGs are one of their big things. Now getting this investment from Tencent, meaning they can self-publish. I'm curious if this is Tencent just trying to invest further in this company in particular, or if this is Tencent really laying down a block, which we've seen them do before, so that no one buys out Platinum Games. If I remember correctly, Platinum is a Japanese studio, and there is word that Microsoft has been looking at acquiring a Japanese studio. So this could be something saying, hey, Microsoft, stand back. We're going to have them self-publish and give them some funding in this direction so they don't get bought out. It could be something else. I don't know if Sony's looking at studios or vice versa, but when we look at Tencent, they really want to control the video game economy. I think this move is somewhat in that direction.
I have to agree. I definitely think it's a power move to kind of prevent Microsoft from moving in any further than they already are into the Asian markets. I definitely think this is a power move by Tencent. Like you said, Joey, they're trying to take over the world, and this is a very smart move for Tencent. Essentially assuring Platinum Games isn't going to go to Microsoft.
That would be my guess as well. Gamers Class, another one of those unique partnerships we see from that Fnatic Cloud9 strand. Gamers Class has partnered up with Fnatic and their star FIFA player Tex, and they will be offering a FIFA 20 course set to be available in February. John, this course might be for you. It's going to cover high-pressure defense, successful attacking strategies, skill moves, and demo analysis. By demo analysis, they pretty much mean watching VODs yourself and finding out how to analyze them. On top of that, you can pre-order the course now for 50% off. We do not have a code because I did not reach out to them, and I don't know if they would have given us one anyway, but you can pre-order now 50% off, $30 for that pre-order. I think this is a really cool idea, John. I think online gaming classes are going to become more and more prominent. We see in-person ones already doing well, like the Game Gym here up in Rockville, Maryland now, at their new location. Players want to learn. Players want to get involved with the games and find out how to get better. You can do that somewhat by watching streamers. You can ask high elo players. This is a chance at getting one of the top pros in FIFA, if not the top pro, really undetermined at this point, but he's won so far in 2020 most of the competitions. So I like this move. I think this is a cool, unique move by Gamers Class. I like to see a high-level player like Tex getting involved with it. I think we'll see it more in like League of Legends and CSGO as well, but I like FIFA as a starting game, especially in the European scene. So I'm excited to see how this plays out. But for $30 as a pre-order, that's really not a bad price package either.
$30 isn't bad, you know, and FIFA is, you know, maybe not in North America as much as it is in the rest of the world, but FIFA is really the dominant video game. And, you know, we talk all the time about how FIFA is continuing to grow here in North America. There's a very strong FIFA community, especially here in the DMV area, around the DC market area. But other major cities have strong FIFA presence as well. It is one of the top selling video games, not just around the world, but in the U.S. also. And there's a lot of people that take it seriously, whether they play Ultimate Team, whether they play Franchise Mode, whether they play Manager Mode or Be a Pro Mode. There's a lot of people that take it incredibly seriously, and this is essentially designed for them. How can you get better at playing FIFA? Why not learn from one of the world's best organizations with some of the best FIFA players? And for $30, that's a steal and a half.
Sorry, I thought I heard a weird noise outside.
Yep.
I have my door closed and there's no one else here. So it's just, I'm extra like, what is that? but yeah, like John said, it's really interesting. Like he said before, we also ran a tournament as far as commentating this past weekend. A lot of those players, very talented, but if some of them are looking to step up again to another level, we did have a former EMLS pro end up winning the tournament in Renato, formerly with DC United. If they want to get closer to his level, maybe we need to see more guys in a more talented finals matchup or semifinals matchup as we continue to see all these FIFA players in the DMV area continue to increase their skill. This is another way to look into doing that. Playing against friends and good friends is a good way to do it, but also checking out pros. Not only just casual streams, but also something like this where pros are directly saying, this is one way that I improved in FIFA. This is one way that you could try to improve in FIFA. This is how to better look over your demos and your videos of yourself playing if you want a VOD review as well. So really cool stuff. And like we both hit on, John, I think this price point is awesome. Like you're looking at $60 as the main price, but if you pre-order ahead of time before next month, $30, that's really not a bad price at all for a class. I mean, you look at college classes, you're talking hundreds of dollars for a college class. This is a simple one-day class, $30. I really like the fee on this.
$30 is one Fortnite skin. I mean, that's a solid deal. You know, I mean, you can actually put it to something that's going to make you play better versus a cosmetic that does not. Was I too hard on Fortnite there, Joey? What was that a little?
Oh, no, I think that was fine. And load up those battle passes, ladies and gentlemen, because Fortnite could be coming to IMAX as well. IMAX is jumping into an esports partnership with Vindex. They are an esports infrastructure startup formed by Major League Gaming co-founders Mike Sepso and Sundance Di Giovanni. I really like this move, too. I think we've seen it happen a bit. League of Legends, the World Championship, has been shown on IMAX before. I believe some CSGO events, as well as Dota's International, have been shown there before. This, to me, is to expand on that. This is going to be a partnership with Vindex to create esports events and experiences exclusive for IMAX theaters worldwide. We have no idea what the games will be, no idea what the ticket prices will be, but I think we could take some guesses. Based on historical evidence, I think it'll be some League of Legends. I think it'll probably be some CSGO and some Dota 2, since those are the big titles out there right now. Maybe some Overwatch League as well. If I'm looking at this, John, if they price it around a movie ticket, I could see people going to this just to get that fun crowd interaction during the games. I want to see more than just championships, though. If they're going to do this, I think they really need to dedicate a bit more to maybe you do playoffs as well. Maybe you even look at the regular season, some key matchups for the local team or whatever in the regular season. So I'd like to see a lot more innovation go into this. I think the people at MLG do have a good idea of esports, and they're going to be able to bring that wealth of experience into the scope here. As far as IMAX goes, I think this is a good move for them. Movie theaters, we've seen it year over year. There's decreases in who's actually going to the movies. We see more people doing Netflix. This could get hit the same way. It could end up with people just sticking to Twitch or just sticking to the platform they want at home. But at the same point, if they strive for that crowd experience and you don't necessarily get it as much in a movie, there'll be like some oohs, some ahs, some tears here and there. But in sporting events and esports events, if you watch them at a bar or whatever, there's a lot more high energy. I think that's what you get with an event like this. I'd love to see this come more. I think slightly cheaper than movie tickets is probably the way to go, especially considering the audience. But if you look at esports as well, they made 3 times what movies did as far as revenue this past year. I think that is a big driving factor for this partnership deal.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest question marks, I guess, will be what's the atmosphere going to be like? Like, what are, is it just going to be a plain IMAX movie theater? Just like you're going to the movies, you buy a ticket, you walk in, you hop in your seat, you watch the event, and you leave. Or are we going to see kind of what we have come to expect from esport events? You're not there just to watch a competition, but you're there for the overall experience. Are we going to have league officials there? Now, granted, I understand if it's in movie theaters all across the country, unless you're limiting it to like 2 or 3 or 4 across the country, it's impossible to do this. That's where I think the local scene can really step up and play a big role here in their local community if they do get these IMAX viewing parties, if you will, is kind of create that environment, create that experience. You know, one of the arguments, you know, theaters have isn't just the ticket prices, but the overall experience has kind of just gone down. The food prices are too much. The seating's uncomfortable. Unless you're in a major metropolitan area and you have stadium seating with built-in recliners and a table that's built into it to hold your beverages and your food, that's what people have come to expect. And that's not every movie theater. Like, the overall movie-going experience at theaters has gone so downhill and the price is so up that there hasn't been kind of that give and take. With esports, if you're going to jump into this same area with IMAX, now granted, some standalone IMAX theaters are really nice, but if it's built into like an AMC or a Regal or your chain of choice that's available in your area, the overall experience is kind of a little lackluster. That's what I want to see. If that experience is good, not just watching on the screen, but the overall experience is good, that's gonna be what brings people back. That community aspect where people can come together and it's a positive experience, a great experience, not just sitting there watching an event, but the overall overarching experience.
Right, and that's the key. Like, when you look at movie theaters today, why am I going to go to a movie, which I do still go to movies, but
I do too.
A lot of people look at it like, why am I going to go to a movie when it's going to be out 3 to 6 months later and I can get it at home, I can refill my drink or popcorn whenever I want, I can have as much of it as I want for a much cheaper price, I can pause the movie and go to the bathroom whenever I want, oh, I'm cold, I can just get a blanket next to me on the couch. Like, there are just so many more options as far as comfort goes. What you wear is also something. I mean, if you want, you could sit there and watch the movie naked, John, but you can't do that in a theater.
Oh my. Oh no. No.
I'm just saying. I mean, there is a lot more options as far as at home. And I think that's one of the reasons we really see moving suffer. Not only because of the whole really strict values on everything, as far as the prices you have to pay for food and drink, the times that you can get up and go to the bathroom really without missing things. I mean, there's just so many limitations in movie theaters right now, as well as just being on time to the show. You have to be at a show at a certain amount of time. Can your parents drop you off in time? Can you get the car there? What's parking costs? How about the metro? Is it longer to go there? What's your time management? So there's a whole bunch of different factors involved. Now with this, I think the prices and everything are going to be about the same. I think that's going to be one big argument against it. But at the same point, with anything sport or esport related with groups of people, I think there's an energy that you don't necessarily have with movies. Like, if you see Star Wars on premiere night, or if you see Harry Potter on premiere night or something like that, you're going to have the fun people dressing up. You're going to have that fun energy. That's one thing. But if you go to the movie the next day, it's not quite as there. It's going to be similar with an esport event, but I think the crowd in general is going to be more energetic. There's going to be more oohs and ahs. People come with signs. People get dressed up in cosplay. I think there'll be a lot more interesting aspects as far as the crowd itself goes in comparison to a movie that's not opening night. So I think that's one of the cool things that we're going to see with this as it comes to fruition. We continue to see more and more things built out about it.
You know, I think Harry Potter might be the only exception to that example, because I remember going to see the later Harry Potter is like 4, 5, 6, 7.1, 7.2. That entire opening weekend and opening week, constantly I saw people cosplaying going to those shows, whether it's the first, second, or third time they've seen it. Tons of people cosplaying throughout the entire time. But that's what makes the community amazing, is while you were waiting, like, having gone to those premieres myself and taping a Muggle sign on my shirt, that's one thing that brings that community together.
And so original, by the way.
It is. It's totally original. Like, all my friends were, like, decked out head to toe, and I was just, like, Muggle, because, like, I didn't want to. But that's what brings the community together. There are so many people that were meeting new people because of that cosplay. We see that in the video game atmosphere also, in just overall nerddom. If you go to an anime convention, Joey, like we've gone to KatsuCon in D.C., for the last several years, the cosplay is absolutely incredible, and it's that community. It creates that community, creates conversation, and people discover new people and discover new friends and new friendships and sometimes relationships. It's really cool just how the community comes together. So yeah, I think if esports is able to capture that in an IMAX setting, I think that's going to not just help the esports scene, but I do think, like you said, Joey, it's going to help the theaters try to recuperate some of that revenue they've been missing out due to the streaming services coming in and really just taking a chunk out of it.
Right, and with the revenue showing 3 times in favor of esports and video games currently compared to movies, I think this is a really good innovative move by IMAX here. YouTube, the streaming wars continue. Again, something we don't need to hit on a ton because there'll probably be more signings next week. But YouTube jumps in with some more signings this time. Laserbeam, Musilek, and Valkyrie. Valkyrie from 100 Thieves. All three of these players stream Fortnite, for example. They're involved in many different esport titles and gaming titles, but Fortnite is one of the biggest ones that they stream and what they're most known for. These exclusive deals will move to YouTube, so we're moving from Twitch to YouTube, and all three of them boast 21 million combined YouTube subscribers already. This is a big move. Again, we see YouTube really focusing one on 100 Thieves and two on Fortnite. They are really banking that Fortnite is going to be around for the long term, or at least as long as these deals are around. They are saying this is the battle royale to follow. So far, it's proven nothing wrong. We had a little bit of a jitter in like February, March range when Apex Legends came out. But other than that, Fortnite has played pretty strong up there on top of the battle royale genre. On top of that, YouTube, again, throwing more money at this. They, along with Caffeine, Mixer, and Twitch, do see reasons to sign streamers, or at least it's going to continue to happen so far from what we've seen. I think this is a good move. Again, not the biggest name streamers out there, but 21 million subscribers is no small number either. So I think this is a good move by YouTube. Again, I think they're banking very heavily on Fortnite, and I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, so we've been critical of other streaming sites or wannabe stream sites, Facebook, when they go out and splash cash like this. YouTube makes sense. YouTube was originally, when YouTube Gaming came out several years ago, it was the original challenger to Twitch, and it did fairly well in comparison to some of the other streaming services that are currently out there. Then YouTube kind of backed away a little bit. They said, hey, you know, Twitch is too strong. We're going to kind of kill off YouTube Gaming, and we're just going to integrate it with everything else, and it kind of got lost in the fray. I like this move by YouTube moving back in. YouTube, again, being one of the original video hosting sites, I think it goes all the way back to like almost like 2004. I have to double check on when it was established, but it's been around forever, and it's really been at the center of internet culture. And if internet culture is moving in the direction of esports and video games and streamers, it's a solid move. YouTube is definitely not Mixer. YouTube is definitely not Facebook. I think, again, it's the strong number two in this argument. I think Mixer may give it its run for its money, but the biggest difference is YouTube has the user base already from over a decade worth of usage. You know, people go there to watch videos. They're going to know to go there to watch streamers now. Now, yeah, Joe, you said they're not the three largest names. They're not a Tfue. They're not a Ninja. They're not, you know, Dr. Disrespect. But like you said, 21 million people follow these YouTubers. That's a lot of people. That's a solid move for YouTube. And again, it's not going to put them in contention with Twitch, but it definitely, I think, gives them a solid number two spot with Mixer at a close third and everyone else at a distance fourth and on in the current stream wars, if we will.
I mean, if we're being honest, I think YouTube even has a case for number one. Like, if we're looking at this on one scope, we look at the streaming aspect. Twitch is obviously very far ahead in the live streaming in comparison to everyone else. But if you look at a lot of these deals, a lot of them, even the Mixer deals, the Caffeine deals, the Facebook deals, and even a lot of the Twitch deals, they are all allowing these creators to continue to post on YouTube. So YouTube might not be winning over the exclusivity for everyone as far as the streaming aspect goes, but if you miss Ninja Stream on Twitch, yeah, you can watch it on Mixer, excuse me. Wow, bad mistake there. If you miss Ninja Stream on Mixer, then you can watch it in the recent, but you could also jump on YouTube and watch a video of it clipped. Same with Twitch. If you miss a big streamer over there, you can do the same thing on YouTube. I think that is one of the biggest wins for YouTube in this whole thing. Sure, they're signing exclusive streamers to actually stream live on their platform, but every other streamer that's being signed exclusively, the majority of them also are still able to post videos on YouTube. So I think if you look at anything, the gray font over here, the gray lining, the silver lining in a sense, I'm all over the place today. That is the silver lining for YouTube. They're number two in a sense for streaming, but as far as the actual video production and being saved on the platform, I think YouTube is number one by far in that sense. So I think overall, that is the big thing pushing them up the ranks here. Again, three big signings. Not the biggest names out there. They're not a Tfue level signing. At the same point, I think this is a really good move for YouTube. They lock them down as live streamers, but continue to get a lot of video content from the other platforms, exclusive streamers as well.
No, I agree. If you definitely look at it that way and overall users and just media content that gets put out there, YouTube is definitely a solid number one. So yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. Stream-wise, just if we're looking at solely streaming, Twitch definitely still king, but YouTube, a very strong argument to be in contention if we include the overall content that is being put out. So like you just said, Joey, everyone still goes to YouTube for highlight videos or recap videos or anything involving their favorite streamer. If they can't dedicate 6 hours to watch Ninja on his stream, they can come back and watch a 30-minute highlight video that's put out by his team. It's so incredibly smart to do that. You hit fans on multiple media fronts. So smart. And in that case, I would put YouTube number one.
Right. And we've seen a lot of other platforms die as well. Plays.tv, very popular esports highlight platform, is now no longer there. A lot of that partly due to clips for streams, but also the fact that players are also putting out their highlight videos on other platforms such as Instagram and YouTube. So definitely check that out. I think that's one big thing that people are not considering as much with these YouTube deals. ESL and DreamHack will run these top top StarCraft and WarCraft 3 events in a 3-year deal with Blizzard. Blizz will provide $1.8 million in the StarCraft 2 prize pool, for example, and its global finals will move to IEM Katowice in 2021. This is a big move in a few different aspects. One of the big reasons is StarCraft is not dead, and WarCraft 3 is getting esports events again. The bigger aspect, if you ask me, if you ask a lot of journalists out there, I believe Jacob Wolf mentioned this as well. This is also Blizzard saying, if it's not Overwatch League and if it's not Call of Duty League, we're not going to care about it as much. We're going to throw money at it, but we're not going to be the ones organizing it. I think this is the right move by Blizzard. I think it could come across negatively for some of these players. At the same point, instead of them half-assing it in a sense and not really giving it the effort they need to, like we've seen with other esports titles like Heroes of the Storm toward its end, this is them saying, we want this scene to still survive. It's just not good enough or not strong enough for us to be the ones making it survive. We're going to pass it on. We're going to give a 3-year deal to DreamHack and ESL here to see what they can do with it, how they can grow the scene. Obviously, popular esports tournament managers. They've done a great job with CSGO. Now they get a chance at Warcraft 3 and Starcraft 2 here. I like this move from Blizzard. I think it's going to get a lot of criticism. At the same point, I'd rather them do this than make the scenes die out completely by themselves.
Yeah, and if we take a look at Blizzard's history when it comes to running esports, Heroes of the Storm, that's a big, big red mark on Blizzard and Activision. You take a look at StarCraft, another title, one of the original esport titles out there, really struggling but still surviving due to a dedicated and diehard fan base. Warcraft 3, some of the biggest hype in the video game industry was when Warcraft 3 was announced that it was being remastered, essentially. Warcraft 3 Reforged. And it got a lot of people excited. Again, Warcraft 3, the game that brought us the mobile genre, that brought us games like League of Legends and Dota 2, all originating from a map called Defense of the Ancients, DOTA, Dota. That came from a multiplayer map made on Warcraft 3. So there is a strong population that wants Warcraft 3 esports, and I think this is a great deal by Blizzard. Yeah, they're going to get criticism for this, but let's be honest here. If Blizzard was doing this, it'd be a $20 million buy-in. And let's be real. Overwatch League teams, if you're listening, how's that return on investment so far? Call of Duty League, how's that return on investment so far? Your league hasn't even kicked off yet. So taking a look at the two examples right now currently that Blizzard's running, and on top that Overwatch League is going to regionally based teams now, and now they have to fly everywhere? Add all the travel expenses in there as well. Where is the return on investment for such a high entry point? That's one of the issues with Blizzard. That's one of the reasons why I like the fact that Blizzard's going to pass this off to a third party to kind of run with it. And then Blizzard being Blizzard, if it's making money, then after 3 years, they'll take it back and just do the same thing anyway.
Well, or they keep it this way. I mean, it seems like with Overwatch League, they're trying so many new innovative ideas that haven't been tried yet. There's a lot of question marks on the value of teams. Should they have paid so much to buy in? Are they getting any return yet? How long is it going to take for return to come? Will it ever come? I mean, there's so many questions out there. I think the model could succeed, but again, until we really see it into play in Season 3 with the homestands being out there, with the increased travel being out there, how are teams really going to adapt? What's the overall price that teams are going to commit? How much of this will Blizzard be paying for? I think there's just too many question marks, at least from a fan perspective, from an outside perspective, to really see how the numbers break down. With that being said, instead of killing off a scene like we saw randomly with Heroes of the Storm back December a year or so ago, this is their way of continuing on these scenes. I want to take this as a sign that Blizzard learned from that mistake, that instead of killing off a scene that had a, maybe it wasn't the biggest audience, but a very strong audience behind it as far as like passion, I think this is one way for them to continue this forward for these smaller scenes without cutting them off completely. this is a way to sell Warcraft 3, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons they're looking into it. But at the same point, like a legendary scene like StarCraft, this is a way to continue that scene on, to allow it to possibly grow again, to allow it to possibly have new life even under ESL and DreamHack without killing that scene off, but also not committing extra resources to it that you currently need to commit to Overwatch League and Call of Duty League to see those two succeed. So I like this move by Blizzard. I think it's going to get a lot of criticism. Some of those StarCraft players and Warcraft 3 players will probably be like, what, you just don't care about us anymore? You're passing us on. At the same point, I think those players should be happy that their scene is not being cut out from under them, similar to what we saw with Heroes of the Storm. Netflix has announced a new original series. John, I just saw this one today, and it got me a good chuckle. They are announcing Team Fortress, which will be based off of Team Fortress 2. This will be this will be a Netflix original series. I'm sure you played Team Fortress 2. It was out years ago. Very, very cartoony game. I would even say awkward because of the way some of these characters interacted with each other. They just had this very awkward, cartoony feel to them. I can't imagine this as a Netflix series. I'm very curious to see what direction they end up taking this. Because to my knowledge, Team Fortress also didn't have like that deep of a story behind it. I might have came in on the later side, but it was just a fun game to pick up with friends. It was kind of like that original Overwatch style in a sense. Tons of fun, but I'm very curious to see where Netflix goes with this one.
Joey, if there's one thing I've learned in my short time here on this planet, being exposed to what we call life, it's that anything video game based, when it's picked up by a non video game based organization or company and produced into a multimedia, I'm gonna say sensation with air quotes around it because it always comes out horribly, it does incredibly awful. Warcraft the movie, terrible. I'm a huge Warcraft lore junkie. Like, that is my drug that I inject straight into my vein. I love the lore of Warcraft. That movie was terrible. You take a look at, oh boy, I try to block them all out. If you want to see something absolutely terrible, look at the Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s.
Oh no, I knew that was coming.
Absolutely freaking terrible. The Goombas? Oh my God, what in the world were they thinking? King Koopa, oh my, I don't even get me started. It looks like an albino Sith from Star Wars, essentially, is what it's coming down to. Terrible, terrible movie, playing upon stereotypes. It was absolutely awful. That is what happens when non-video game-based companies take a video game and run with it. Yes, Netflix has put out some amazing content, some amazing movies, some amazing original content. The Irishman is up for how many Oscar awards this upcoming show in 2020 in next month, and now they're gonna do this with Team Fortress. I mean, you know what, Joey, I'm gonna watch one episode, and when I am ready to just drink myself into oblivion because it's that awful, I'll turn it off. But that's what I'm expecting from Netflix. I'm expecting the same thing I've seen from every other company that's produced video game television or movies. It's all garbage. It's all hot garbage because they don't understand the game, they don't understand the scene, they don't understand the community, and they take their own creative liberties with it, and it's pure hot brown ice cream emoji is what we're going to call that. It's hot crap is what I'm trying to say, Joey. It is awful. Sorry.
Now, I expected a good reaction, but not quite on that level there, John. That was
sorry.
Wow, good times right there.
I hate it. I don't like it at all.
So I think this is awkward, too. I don't know if this is going to be a great show. I think I'll probably give it an episode or two a try. With that being said, though, John, Netflix is one of those ones that has actually done very well in the video game area. They just released The Witcher recently, and that has gone off to high critical acclaim. People are pulling it all over the place. It ended up selling a ton more copies of the video game as well because of the show. So Netflix did a very good job with that in a real action environment. I don't know if this one's going to be cartoon-based or real action. With the idea of some of the characters in the game, I think it has to be cartoon-based because I can't imagine people fitting those builds in real life. But with that being said, I think it'll be interesting. I think if anyone can do it, I would be curious to see how Netflix does it after the success of The Witcher. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, historically, movies have not done very well translating from video games to movies or TV series for that matter. Halo's one that's had some success. The Warcraft movie, again, did not do well in North America, but it did do extremely well overseas in Asia, particularly China. So we'll have to see how it goes. But for now, it's one to watch or one to keep an eye on there.
And just real quick, I want to point out Renato in chat in Twitch here just made a very good point. Anime turned into real life movies, live action movies as well. Terrible. Netflix did that also with Death Note.
And that was bad.
That was an absolute abomination to Death Note. And Netflix, if anyone from Netflix is listening, shame on you. Never do that again. You destroyed a wonderful anime.
And they did. It was the other one, too. I can't think of the name of it. But yeah, they've had some questionable moves, especially in the anime realm. So their video game realm, they're doing all right. The anime side converting to real life, not as pretty. So keep an eye out for that one. Team Fortress 2. I just, the imagining in my head right now with some of those characters being played out in sequels and movies, and that's going to be unique.
Ooh, idea real quick, Joey. What if Netflix, it makes it like a versus kind of thing, right? So it's Team Fortress versus not a ripoff of Team Fortress Overwatch teams, and they kind of battle it out for world domination against each other. Like one could be like King Cobra, one could be like G.I. Joe.
Okay, I think that's cute and all, but here's what I would do. So Halo Red versus Blue, that thing is still so incredibly popular right now. Team Fortress is built on that same mentality with characters like the Spy, where they could really play off of two bases with a ton of comedy built in. If you're going to do this right, I think you not necessarily copy completely, but take the general idea of Red versus Blue and change that around a bit. So that's my personal thoughts. We'll see what happens. But we will not be hearing from Sony at E3 because they will not be attending, John. It just came out today. Sony will not be attending E3 for the second year in a row. Last year, a lot of people had question marks about it. One of the big reasons was the amount of money it cost to go to E3. Another big reason was the fact that they not necessarily had many games to show. Another reason was that they had some arguments with ESA or some differences of creative opinions, different things like that. But that was the end of a console cycle. That was a year that necessarily didn't matter that much for gamers. Now we're looking at this year, 2020, the year the new consoles release at the end. Sony has again elected not to go to E3. What are your thoughts on this one?
It's all part of the game plan, my dude. It's simple as this. You don't show up. You don't leak anything. You don't show off anything. You create this veil that masks everything that the PS5 is doing. I mean, they just announced their glorious PlayStation 5 logo that has not changed in over 50 years. You know, it's absolutely fantastic. So then all of a sudden when the PS5 drops, because it hasn't leaked or anything yet, because God forbid the developer kit that was leaked, if that's what it looks like, Joey, I'm done. It creates this veil. It's the suspense. It's the hype for a PlayStation 5. No, Joey, it's a terrible move. It's obviously a terrible move. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot. What are they going to do? The console comes out holiday time in 2020, so towards the end of 2020. What are they going to do in 2021 for E3? Probably still not show up. This is a terrible trend Sony is on. They're losing everybody to Microsoft. Everyone's jumping ship. They left E3 last year. Okay, yeah, you can make a deal. It wasn't that big of a deal because it was the end of the console of that console's life cycle. But when the next generation is coming out and Microsoft is literally blowing you out of the hype waters, out of literally, you know, just the possible content that's going to be coming out. I mean, Microsoft is playing this right. If the idea that Sony is trying to hide behind this veil to build suspense, they're doing it wrong. They're doing it horribly, horribly wrong. Now, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because I'm brainwashed because I'm a Sony fanboy. I'll fully admit that. But overall, for gamers, it's a bad, bad move, regardless of the price to go there, Joey. It's Sony. It's so much more than just the video game side. It's electronics. It's technology. They have the money to do it. They need to go to E3. They can't just keep doing this. It's a terrible, terrible move.
Wow. I think we're going to take not quite the opposite side, but you brought up a lot of good things. A few different things I do want to look at from the Sony perspective. I think their console gets announced way before E3. I think they're going to announce it, at least announce something in February, March range, and then something else in May, probably with one of their little really knock off Nintendo Directs where they do their Sony, whatever they're called. A PlayStation Now, PlayStation Press X. What is the name of that thing? Do you have any idea? What's their little Sony deal?
Therapy time.
I don't know if that's what it's called, but that's probably what they need after this. With that being said, I think Sony's going to do a great job. They're going to build up hype going into E3 and prior to E3. With that being said, the funding for E3 is a lot of money. It does cost a ton of money to go to E3. Some people argue that the attendance has gone down over the last couple of years. Other people argue it's just gone up. It's just in multiple buildings now instead of just the same convention center, because Microsoft also holds something in their center nearby right across the street or something. On top of that, I think E3 is a great venue as far as people watching streams, at least for North America. Sony's other argument with this is that now, because they're not spending money on E3, they can go to a lot of other shows. Sony does have a lot less money than Microsoft, so that's something to keep in mind. I think Microsoft will match them at every single show and still be at E3. Again, money's a big factor in that. And with Microsoft taking more and more of an advantage of the gaming industry, I think that's going to play into their hands of why they're doing this. When you look at the overall factor, though, I don't like this move, not because of the money that's going to be lost, but the fact that, one, fans are looking for this, and they want to demo stuff at E3, one of the biggest things in North America. Now they don't have the opportunity to. Maybe they'll have it at Comic-Con or some other conventions here and there. At the same point, when I'm looking for announcements in North America, E3 is one of the biggest conventions. That's the streams I'm watching for game announcements. That's the streams I'm watching for big tech announcements outside of stuff like CES. I mean, this is one of the biggest things. And yes, it might have declined a bit over years. Yes, they had an issue where they leaked journalist information last year with ESA. I think ESA still is trying to build a good event. They've now got the Jeff Keighley from the Game Awards involved as well. He's working to help bring E3 back to make new connections and partnerships. I think that's going to be a good move as well. In doing this, I think ESA and E3 want Sony to be there, but at the same point, as they decide to decline year over year, now 2 years in a row, I think that starts to throw a little bit of nails into that relationship. I think they start to be separated more and more. So when it comes down to priority, maybe of time slots, Sony might not have that top priority anymore if they do eventually come back. And with this being a big console generation, with you wanting to get your name and brand out there and your games that are going to be available as best you can, I think this opens the door big time for Xbox. Sony fans and gamers in general can say, well, hey, Sony's just playing the let's put less detail out there. Let's make it more mysterious. We know we're going to sell consoles anyway because we outsold the Xbox by a ton this generation. Well, hey, guys, look at the Nintendo Switch. The Nintendo Switch has secretly been doing extremely well and selling its own unique titles. And now Xbox, with all these big services, they have millions of people that has doubled in size for Xbox Game Pass subscribers over this past year. And you're looking at Xbox continue to make strides, continue to buy developers, continue to leak new video games. So while Sony's leaking PS5 logos where they change a number, Microsoft is leaking more and more games out there. So to me, I want them both to succeed as a gamer. I want them both to do extremely well. But it seems like Sony is just following in Microsoft's footsteps, but taking off some of the big events like E3. I'm not the biggest fan of this. Some journalists will argue against me. Sony fanboys will definitely argue against me. But I think if you're going to be somewhere in North America for a console release year, you got to be at E3. I'm not a big fan of this decision.
This fanboy is not arguing with you. I think you're 100% correct.
There you go. Nintendo. We did have a Nintendo Direct, speaking of Nintendo and not whatever Sony's one's named. Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX is headed to the Nintendo Switch on March 6th. John, did you ever play one of those? Because I did not.
The DX?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nintendo Dungeon Rescue.
No, I did not do Dungeon Rescue.
Okay, there you have it. John and I left the Pokemon in the cave for that game, but if you're interested, check it out. Jeez. And then Pokemon Sword and Shield, the record-selling Pokemon game that came out on Nintendo Switch this past November, they are getting an expansion pass, I believe the first in Pokemon history. That'll include the Isle of Armor, set to drop in June 2020, and then the Crown Tundra, releasing later in fall 2020. These big expansions, some people are pissed that Pokemon has expansions in general. I like the idea of more content. I can agree with some people that said the Pokédex should have been finalized at the beginning and these lands should have been in there. I sound like Professor Oak. But with that being said, I like the idea of more content. I feel like live service is the way that many games are going. I don't want to pay a ton of money for an expansion. I haven't looked at the pricing yet. At the same point, the idea of new regions, having more Pokemon, both new and old, new items, different changes. The Galarian Pokemon, where we see old Pokemon changed a bit for a Galarian version, I think has worked really well. So some people are not happy about this. I'm not one of them. I think it's a cool idea. I'm cool with more content. I'm not arguing here.
Yeah, I think Pokemon is that kind of community that understands that just the idea around Pokemon is a little bit limited. So they do have to come up with new and different ways to kind of create that excitement and continue on the story. I mean, every Pokemon game is essentially the same basic concept. You want to collect Pokemon, you want to raise Pokemon up, you want to defeat gym leaders. There's a certain story that goes along with it that may or may not match up with the anime version of it, but nonetheless, the Pokemon community is still very adamant about that video game, and I love the fact that they're going to do expansion passes. That's going to be absolutely fantastic. Add new regions, you know, tweak the originals for a little bit. You know, it doesn't have to stay at the original 150, even though, you know, I'd make the argument, the same argument I have with League of Legends, is that the more, you know, characters you put out there, the harder it is for everyone to kind of remember everything, or if they, you know, they don't want to experience everything or try to catch them all, if you will, it's a lot harder to do it. But again, that gives you more playable time, more playability for those titles to try to catch them all, or to try to, you know, go on and try different, you know, tactics when you go to the gyms. So I do like this. I like the expansion packs. I think it's great for Pokemon. I think it's great for Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, all those people arguing that the Pokedex should have been completely full at the beginning. Who in the hell has enough time to catch 800 different Pokemon, men and female and shinies and all this? If you have that much time, we need to talk, ladies and gentlemen. You could edit a podcast for us. There are many other productive things that could be done in that time. I like the idea of spreading this out over time. Give me time to catch 300 or whatever's in there at the time. Then maybe add another 100, 150 in. This, to me, is a easier way to ease people into the ecosystem and really not have everyone going nights without sleep trying to catch all these Pokemon and fill this Pokedex to be the best. I mean, Ash Ketchum did it at some point, I guess. I can't say I've followed through the whole series, but I'm sure he went on to do great things, and I hope you guys will as well, but now doing it in expansion passes.
Jeez, you're being pretty hard on Ash.
I'm just saying, like, 800 Pokemon. Let's go, people. League of Legends newest champion, Aphelios. John, have you had a chance to play against or as Aphelios?
No, but I've watched one of our OTN members play him, and he was absolutely awful at him. But hey, he's number one ace soul in North America. That's something, at least.
Yeah, they might not ban Clues or Aphelios, but over in Korea, he is not getting any playtime, John. He has reached a 223% combined ban rate on the Korean League ladder. 223. How do you do that math, ladies and gentlemen? Typically, the max possible is a 200% ban rate, meaning both teams ban the champion 100% of the time. On top of that, John, with remakes, the Korean ladder system adds those in as well. So with the remake bans added in, he exceeded that and became 223% banned. He is the most banned champion by a lot, with the second most being Akali in Korea with a 174% ban rate right now. If you're in Korean League of Legends, best of luck trying out Aphelios, because apparently no one is allowed to.
You know, I understand his kit is very unique, very strange. I'm not a huge fan of it, but generally when a new hero or champion or whatever comes out, it's going to get banned. Like, people don't understand it. They don't understand its kit. They don't understand the champion's skill and how it fits into the current meta. So it's normal for them to get banned out because no one really knows how to handle it. And then, you know, about a month or two into it, when people start figuring out, you know, they do custom games and they figure out how to play it, then you start to see the bans start to come down. This is a little weird. We're not seeing that with Aphelios, and I think that has to do with how complicated his kit is. I think a lot of people are either struggling to understand and play Aphelios at a level that other teammates are comfortable, so they're kind of banning it so their other teammates can't pick them, versus, oh, I'm afraid someone on the other team is going to get him and absolutely demolish us. At least that's my personal experience. Again, you know, being, you know, silver/bronze trash that I am in League of Legends, that's just the experience I've been seeing so far. And when a skilled player like Clue from the OTN community, who, again, number one ace soul in North America, who made it to, what, Masters last season?
Masters.
D1, he made it all the way to Masters. Like, he fed like crazy against like a silver mid laner playing Aphelios. I mean, again, not saying that
he's gonna love this podcast.
You know, he doesn't listen to this anymore. It's fine. It's one of those things where it's like, even a high skilled player like Clue in our community struggled playing him. So I think it's more of a ban to stop your teammates from playing him versus the other team getting them and popping off on them as of right now.
Right. I mean, I've had it both ways. Like, I have played against Aphelios in lane. Again, not much higher of an elo than John. I'm just in gold, low gold, that is. So with that being said, I've played up against plat players at most, and I have been wrecked by Aphelios. I've also had ADCs do very well as Aphelios. But as a support player, I have no idea what he does. He has these five weapons. He has like double to triple the abilities of a normal champion. I'm like, when do I go in? When do I try to play aggressive? When do I need to play back? Because I have no idea what's dishing out damage, how his abilities work, and all that. So a lot of people, I think, are just banning him just because he's so complicated to learn. Like, I've laned with him five or six times now. I have no idea what his kid is like. I know some of the abilities. I know ones that hurt like hell when they're on the other team, but I don't know how to line it up to play as or against. So I think that's one of the main reasons you see it is just because he's so complicated. But if a mechanical player is given him and a very good mechanical player, he can straight up dominate. So with people having so many question marks and still not understanding his kick completely, I think they're afraid to have him in the hands of a good player. So a lot of people just ban it out just so that's not becomes not so that does not become a possibility. As my throat is still possibly moving on in this note, I'm dying over here if you can't tell.
You are dying.
I'm going to cough quickly. Okay, now that that's out of the way, a couple more notes here to end up on this episode. The LCS's new format. This is the League of Legends champion scene in North America. They have added double elimination to the playoffs, something I am a big fan of. I like the idea of teams having a second chance. So if you don't make, maybe you have a bad matchup, you end up getting run in a reverse sweep by Cloud9, you win another chance, you come back in the loser's bracket. Then from there, you have the ability to win your way back up. If you lose again, you're out for good. If you win, then you have that second chance. On the opposite side, Worlds qualification is done differently. It'll all be done in summer. So what you win in spring will simply just win you an option to go to MSI, possibly Rift Rivals as well later in the summer. A lot of people are pissed about that because they don't feel like it's enough to really give people the opportunity to make their way there to make spring really feel worth it. I think one of my arguments, and John has the same argument as well as some other ones, I think one of the biggest things is now you can see more teams be creative. In the past, we could only see teams like TSM, Cloud9, Fnatic, and G2 over in the LEC. They could play and be somewhat creative because they knew they could always find their way back up top or close to the top three. Now we get to see teams that might be closer to the bottom, like the new Golden Guardians roster, Scorsel, if you're listening. Now it gives them the ability to be more creative as well. They can be a little bit more creative in spring, try new comps, try different things out that they normally wouldn't. Maybe you try a few of your academy players out a bit more, and you're able to do that at the level of comfort where the worst thing that happens is you miss MSI. So then you get a reset in summer. It's all good to go. That's where you can really try to qualify for Worlds. So I think there's pluses and minuses to this. As a viewer, I think it makes the spring season a little less attractive, as well as a player for some of these teams as well. But if they really take advantage of it, if the coaching staff is ready to go, I think this is a way for them to try out new things, try to get on a higher level of play prior to that summer. One more issue. The summer does expand its playoffs. So instead of including six teams, it will include eight teams. I am not a big fan of that. With only two teams being left out, I feel like that really gyps those two teams. I think you should drop back to six, give two teams the bye, and then on their fourth.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I completely agree that I think it should be limited to six, not eight. That's the, everyone makes the playoffs mentality. Not a huge fan of that. Spring split, I'm going to start calling it spring training. I'm going to make that equation to baseball real quick because that's when baseball teams kind of play with their roster and do funny things. They try new players at different positions. They try new strategies, new pitch counts, new ideas, new everything. That's what spring split's going to become. I don't think MSI is going to be enough, at least in North America, to really make these organizations want to compete. Now, Joey, earlier in the week, you did make a great comparison saying that the teams that have gone on to MSI and compete well in MSI have done well in Worlds. For North America, I don't think that matters because they just absolutely choke in Worlds, it feels like. Unless you're looking 2 years ago where Cloud9 made it to the Final Four. But other than that, most North American teams do choke. So I don't think that's enough to really appease anyone. I think the diehard league fans are going to be okay with it because, like you said, Joey, the strategy, they're going to be able to switch things up, try new champions, try new comps, maybe get some academy players on the roster, have them perform on the stage and kind of like get them ready for their next step in their career also, just like what we see in spring training. So overall, not a huge fan of the changes to spring split. I do understand why they're doing it. I don't necessarily agree with it because it pretty much, like you said, Joey, makes spring meaningless because let's be real here, MSI, no one in North America cares about it.
Sticking with Riot Games, who continues to put the S in games in their name, Riot announces their next tabletop game. Previously, they had Mechs and Minions. Now they are announcing Telstone's King's Gambit. This is going to be a bluffing game with perfect information for two or four players. It's a Demacian variant of game played across Runeterra, and it's one of many tabletop games being developed, so they do have quite a bit in the works. We don't have too many details on this, but I believe it is lore-based. So this particular thing, Telstones or King's Gambit, is out there. It's in the lore. People have asked for it to become a game. Now it's becoming one as a board game. League of Legends It has a counterpart in the card game area now. We heard it announced in October. It's had a few betas since then. Legends of Runeterra. That's Riot CCG. It will begin open beta testing on PC on January 24th. It will include ranked, friends list, friend challenges, guardians, which I think are going to be similar to the player pieces, I guess. I don't know exactly what they're called. What are they called in TFT? The little guys that jump around. John gives you the blank stare. Oh, you've got enough of them. Don't even give me that.
I do have enough of them. Little Legends.
Little Legends. So I think Guardians are going to be very similar to Little Legends. You also get the custom boards that we've seen in TFT as well. And most importantly, no resets. With this being open beta, there are no longer resets to the ladders and ranked and your system and your cards and all that fun stuff. It's now open and eventually it will roll right into the main game. So those of you interested in CCGs, with that genre being very open right now after Artifact did not do so well, Hearthstone has kind of fallen off its horse as well. Magic has done pretty well in the meantime, but again, that genre feels very open. League of Legends with its huge player base, Legends of Runeterra could be a big contender in that area. Check that out. Again, PC January 24th. Upcoming leagues, LCS and LEC for League of Legends are set to kick off on the weekend of January 25th, just a couple weekends away. Check those out. Again, the LCS with the new format, LEC, exciting stuff ahead. They had a great year last year. Viewership counts are up across the board. Check out those leagues in addition to Call of Duty League, which will also be opening that same weekend with Genesis being a giant Smash tournament happening as well. Last but not least, a little forward, about a month and a half forward from where we are now, the DreamHack Halo series will return February 24th through the 23rd. The reason this is being mentioned so early is because it's a big deal. The prize pool is not that big. It's only $50,000. But the big key factors here, controller and mouse and keyboard will be allowed. They are saying if you want to play on controller or mouse and keyboard, be comfortable, have fun. At the same point, this is going to be our first Halo PC tournament as well. This is Halo Reach on a PC LAN. This could really set a huge milestone as we see Infinite coming out later this year in December. So definitely keep an eye on that one as well. With that, John, how did the EMLS start to their season go this past week?
EMLS started, and Joey, we hit on the top of the show. You know, I'm going to save the bad news for last. Congratulations to Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati's Fiddled for taking home first place with, I believe this, it's not the Red Bull, it's New York FC on this one.
Yeah, this is Man City's New York affiliate. Yeah.
Diddy Chrislito and Vancouver's Extra, or Extra, rounding out the top three. Joey, but the big news here was the publicity stunt that is the Philadelphia Union. I never knew how to pronounce his last name. Is it a Jay Ajayi? There you go. Philly's Super Bowl winning running back that made a name for himself in Miami. Sure, we'll say that because no one makes a name for themselves in Miami. Is playing as the EMLS player. Now, let me tell you why this is such a terrible idea. Not only did he go winless, but the Philadelphia Union had Dulsta last year. Dulsta was essentially the number one player all over EMLS. Like, he was the best player. He won almost every single competition. He was the man to beat. Obviously, he moved on to Nashville FC or FC Nashville. I believe he is going to school out in Nashville. So it makes sense for him to make that move. What doesn't make sense is the Philadelphia Union signing this guy. I mean, look, if you're going to sign an NFL player, who a former NFL player or a free agent or whatever we're going to go with that is good at FIFA, you're going with Chad Johnson. You're going with Ocho Cinco himself, not this guy. He went, 0-12, and he still makes it to the knockout round just because it's the host city? Look, I understand it got the views, and that's all this is for. It's for the views. It's for the publicity. It's for the marketing. That's all this is. If the Philadelphia Union actually took this seriously, they wouldn't have hired some, you know, guy that can't even make it in the NFL to play EMLS for him. It's an absolute awful move. And this guy was getting creamed. It's not like he was losing 1-0, 2-0, 3-1. He was getting shelled like 4-0, 5-0. It was absolutely awful. Philadelphia Union, I am sure you can find someone with at least, you know, 5 skill levels above this guy that you're probably overpaying to essentially just bring you clicks all over the place to compete for your team. I mean, this is essentially making a mockery over your own involvement in EMLS.
Yeah, I mean, we have one of those guys in chat right now, Renato, former EMLS player for DC United, very talented player. He actually just won that VYSA tournament that we were talking about earlier in the show this past weekend. So definitely check him out, Philly, if you're looking for another player. Great guy out there, really fun personality. He's really grown his social media over the past year as well. So we give a huge kudos to Renato. Love watching him play, and great player out there, Philadelphia. He probably do a little better than JHI. I think he could, I can't even say double his record because he had a zero. You can't double zero.
You can only go up from there. And also, just real quick here, too, you know, Ronaldo did point out here, obviously he's involved still with the EMLS scene. He knows all the pros and everything. Just a small correction. Nashville is actually paying for Dulsta's tuition as part of the deal for signing for Nashville at Temple University. So, you know, that's something that's impressive too. He's going to Temple. It's not like he's going to, like, you know, a community college somewhere. He's actually going to an esteemed university and playing EMLS at the same time. A lot of these guys are doing it too. Last year, Renato did it as well. Full-time college student, full-time EMLS pro, and Philly decides to go with a washed-up running back that can't even make it in the NFL just for the lulls. Am I going to say the lulls? It's actually quite irritating that they made this move, in my opinion.
But John, a lot to look forward to. We have great esports that happened this past weekend, more ahead, and then again, 2 weeks from now, a whole lot of big events for the fighting game community, the League of Legends community, and much more.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. Before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us and this show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, find us streaming regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live. We stream this podcast Monday nights around 7:15. And on top of that, we have many other streams throughout the week. Go ahead and check those out.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.
Level up.